It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Wednesday. This is Light the Tower, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. I am Jeff Howe. However you're listening, wherever you're listening, especially those of you listening in Northwest Williamson County, Florence, Texas, USA, America, my neck of the woods down in Hayes County, back in the 666, wherever you're listening this morning, we just thank you for enjoying this portion of our live local programming here on the Horn, our two-hour slice of heaven. We are the high school sports show of record. We do talk a lot of Longhorns here on Light the Tower, and we'll cover all of it here on today's edition of the show. We have lost our way. We're continuing to find ourselves as Craig continues to take vacation, but fret not. We continue to roll through our Rolodex of co-hosts and guests. In case you missed it this morning, with B&E sans the Buckeyes on vacation, so it was Aaron and Isaiah Collier, TMZ, getting a little more airtime this morning. In our Horn Top 20 Countdown, Texas is to date. The Longhorns are number 18 in the Horn Top 20 Countdown. We'll talk about that throughout the show at 11:30. Special guest joining us, 24/7 Sports National College Football Analyst Blake Brockermeyer, going to join us to talk about the Longhorns. We'll also dip into the Big 12 and talk a little bit of big picture college football in this part of the country with Blake. Not going to talk a whole lot of realignment. If you need more Blake Brockermeyer, want more Blake Brockermeyer, want more of Blake's analysis on realignment and just national college football, a great resource is the College Football Daily Podcast, the 24/7 Sports College Football Daily Podcast, hosted by Trey Scott. You can get that anywhere you get your podcast. Really, really good way to start your day. Anywhere from 15 minutes to a half hour, just boom, a little quick shot of college football knowledge and insight to start your morning. And Blake is a really big part of that now that he's in the 24/7 Sports family. And he'll also be doing some stuff with CBS Sports since we are owned by Viacom CBS and do a lot with CBS Sports, especially on their HQ platform. So Blake Brockermeyer coming up at 11:30. We've got a couple of Longhorn notebooks. We've got an Inconceivable. Let me bring in our esteemed producer, the man behind the glass, the publisher, curator, otherwise major domo of everything FlexATX at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram, FlexATX.com. He is Snoop Daniel. Snoop, did you make it out to high schools yesterday and or this morning?
I did. Yesterday, I stopped by Hendrickson, got it popping
with
Coach
Killian.
Okay, so
you did make it out there. Nice.
And this morning, I got it popping with Maynard.
Did you send Coach Killian my best?
Oh, he wasn't in the greatest mood, so I didn't. It's like Coach Killian don't like to do a lot of interviews. It's tough to get him to get
on
camera.
We here at the Horn send Coach Killian our best. Coach Killian worked at Florence High School once upon a time.
Did he?
Yeah, he was an employee of Florence ISD. So good dude, great dude. Been the head coach. I forgot. Is he the longest tenured head coach in the area?
In the Pflugerville area. Still in Austin is Jeff Abels.
Jeff Abels, okay.
Yeah, at Bowie, I'm pretty sure.
Coach Abels got him by a couple years, I think, maybe. Okay.
After Coach John Wogg retired from Crockett. So.
That sounds about right. Okay, so you got over to see Hendrickson. How the Hawks looking right now?
They look good. You know, they had that Oklahoma commit, Cedric Roberts, and they got him playing both ways. You know, I put on Twitter that he was Jatavion Sanders-like, and of course, people ripped it apart and like, no, he doesn't. And I'm like, come on, man. We're just, you know, trying to build up our guy, please.
Yes. But Snoop's here to uplift everybody
correct. In
the greater Austin area.
People say that Flex feels that every team in Austin is going to win state, and it's true.
Yeah, Cedric Roberts, he is a three-star prospect in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings. In the composite, the number 94 overall prospect in the state of Texas right now. So, and you got out to Maynard this morning?
I did. I actually have a 30-second clip if you want it. I interviewed, maybe later in the show, I interviewed James Keller. They got a good team. Che Wabuku, the Pitt commit, he's very talented.
You can go ahead. Well, actually, you know what we'll say is the 30-second clip is Coach Keller.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go ahead and save that, Snoop, because we got some breaking news
now. Okay, so to eat.
And it's breaking good news. The Texas Longhorns have added their 16th verbal commitment to the 2022 recruiting class. Linebacker Owen Carey, a prospect out of Santa Ana, California, Modern Day High School, that prep powerhouse out in the state of California. That is Modern Day, 6'3", 225 pounds, the number 587 ranked prospect in the country, according to the 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Greg Biggins, one of our national analysts at 24/7 Sports, who does a really good job covering the state of California, and our West Coast team is the best in the business between Greg Biggins, Blair Angulo, and Brandon Huffman. Those guys do an outstanding job keeping us covered on prospects in Pac-12 country at 24/7 Sports. Biggin says this kid's got what it takes to play any of the three linebacker positions in Pete Kwiatkowski's defense. Could play either of the two inside spots or could bulk up and potentially play one of those two hybrid edge spots. So Owen Carey, 6'3", 225 pounds, three-star linebacker out of Modern Day High School in California. Yes, that is the same high school that produced Brew McCoy, who suddenly found himself in a little bit of trouble, but I digress. Owen Carey, the number 16, the 16th verbal commitment for the Texas Longhorns and head coach Steve Sarkisian in the 2022 recruiting class. So pretty good start to the day for the Longhorns on the recruiting trail. It's been a little dry. The Bryce Anderson recruitment not trending the way anybody on the 40 acres would want it to trend. It sounds like Texas A&M has taken the lead in that recruitment. So Longhorns needed a shot in the arm, and especially, you know, Jeremy Patton, the linebacker from Tannehill, the athlete, the two-way player out of Tannehill who was projected to be a linebacker, you know, that was a recruitment that it looked like Texas was in the lead, then it looked like he was headed to Michigan, then suddenly he changed his mind and ended up committing to Baylor over the weekend. So this is Texas pivoting a little bit from that Jeremy Patton loss, getting them a linebacker that Jeff Choate and Pete Kwiatkowski like, and Owen Carey out of Modern Day. So we'll take your questions, comments, anything you got on the Specs text line, 337-3776. You know what, Snoop? Let's go ahead and get to your cut. Go ahead and set this up for us.
Yeah, well, I was just at Maynard this morning, and I was talking with Coach James Keller, and I just basically asked him what was it like finally having a camp that's not as COVID-y. And being in District 11-5A, I think it's wide open. So 30-second clip here is James Keller.
And it's nice to be out here with the kids and not having to be all that crazy social distancing and worrying about constantly on them about masks and all that stuff. We're able to coach the kids a little bit better and stop concentrating on COVID. I think everything's going smooth, and man, I just hope it keeps up and we don't get any more restrictions.
11-5A, it seems like it's a little more open this year. What are your thoughts on the tough this year?
Man, 11-5A, you know, it's one of the toughest football districts in the state. It's a lot of competition, but our kids are here. We've got another year under our belt. We've got a lot of good starters coming back. You know, I think it's going to be a wide open race.
Nice. So, kind of echoing what you just said right there, Snoop. That district appears to be pretty wide open.
Well, Cedar Park graduated like 48 seniors, so it's man, it's going to be tough. I really think Weiss is going to be the surprise, but Maynard looks sneaky good, and nobody's really talking about him.
Nice. So, again, we are the high school sports show of record here on the Horn. So, Snoop will bring you all the preps, news, notes, and nuggets as we motor along and get ready for the high school football season. You got any plans, Snoop, on anywhere today, tomorrow you're headed?
Not yet. I do need to map it out. I didn't plan past Wednesday.
So just flying by the seat of your pants at this point?
Yeah, because I just know, like I said, we talked about yesterday, once the season gets underway, like I'll have no time to barely eat and sleep. So almost like, you know, cautiously approaching it.
Hey, I thought about this today. we've got to be the unhealthiest show of all the weekday shows here on the Horn.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, between me, you, and Craig, our eating habits are not good, and the three of us get really busy during football season, and, you know, Craig and I doesn't really slow down in the spring either. We've probably got the worst sleep habits of anybody on the other shows. I say that full well knowing Brad Kellner is a full-time staff member here and is an on-air talent, but Rod and Kevin kind of balance that out, and I'm willing to bet that Shirts and Skins is the healthiest show
without a doubt
on the air. Aaron E. Hogan keeps himself in good shape, and you know, the Buck has his workout equipment in here. So yeah, I think that's a banner, Snoop, we can wave. I don't know if you want to wave it proudly or, you know, with hanging your head or whatnot, but we are the unhealthiest show here on the Horn.
Well,
we need to do something to change that. Like anybody what? Watching on Twitch right now can. Well, actually, no. I don't know. Where's the Twitch camera?
I don't see you.
Why are both Twitch cameras? Would the E. Hogan just feel the need to have both Twitch cameras on him today? Yeah. I'm just realizing this after we made the switch this morning. I don't have a Twitch camera on me.
Yeah, that's why your mic wasn't on at first, because things are switched there. I don't know.
So if you're watching on Twitch, you can see Snoop, but you can't see me. I'm John Cena right now. So we'll see. We'll see if maybe we can get that fixed. Someone in the Specs text line was asking what happened to Brew McCoy. If you didn't hear the news, I'm reading directly from our USC property. At 247sportsuscom, this article was published. This was published 2 days ago. Redshirt sophomore Brew McCoy was arrested on suspicion of a felony more than a week ago. uscfootball.com has learned the wide receiver was charged with intimate partner violence with injury. According to an LAPD spokesperson, McCoy, 21, was released on a $50,000 bail on July 24th, the same day as his arrest. He is scheduled to appear in court on November 24th. Quote, USC does not condone violence of any kind, the athletic department said when contacted for a statement. Quote, we are aware of the situation in USC's Office for Equity, Equal Opportunity, and Title IX is reviewing it. Because of federal student privacy laws, we are unable to share additional information at this time. The student athlete has been temporarily removed from team activity. So that is the situation with Brew McCoy. I like Dan on the Specs text line basically telling us to double down on our unhealthiness as a show, saying we should order some double cheeseburgers via a food delivery app and celebrate our, I guess, this achievement that we've unearthed, Snoop.
That's a nice text.
And I feel like as much as we talk, because, you know, when we do Inconceivable, especially when Craig is in, Craig like culls the internet for all the food related Inconceivable items. I feel like Trey Elling is walking the halls listening to our show just in disgust. As much as we talk about fast food, as much as we enjoy fast food, I'll come in here with a donut and a Coke Zero or whatever. So I feel like we're kind of looked down upon, Snoop. But this is a banner that we can wave proudly.
Hey, so did you see the NIL tweet that the University of Texas?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that, and we might as well do it now since you brought it up. So yeah, so look, the part of the issue with
it looked like a 12-year-old made that graphic.
Right. Part of the issue with name, image, and likeness is the way the law is written in the state of Texas. We talked about this in relation to the Quinn Ewers situation. One of the reasons why he's enrolling early at Ohio State and bypassing his senior year at South Lake Carroll is because being in the state of Ohio, being a college student athlete, he can take advantage of the name, image, and likeness deals that are being presented to him, which reportedly are going to push into and perhaps over seven figures. So it's the way the state law is written, but it's the way Texas is interpreting the state law is what it sounds like. Look, I'll be honest with the listening audience. I'm a little out of my depth when it comes to the nitty-gritty of the name, image, and likeness law and whether this is how Texas is interpreting it, that's what I'm led to believe, that this is how Texas is interpreting it. But aside from that, Snoop, what you said is accurate. The school's official Twitter account put out a PowerPoint presentation via Twitter. It did not go over very well at all, and rightfully so. Whoever was running that account, whoever was responsible for those tweets, got roasted pretty good on social media last night.
It was bad in so many different ways. I mean, aside from what it actually said,
you can't
even read it.
Did you scroll through there, Snoop, and get the gist of it? Like, it's, I don't know, it's almost, I felt like I was reading, like, I don't know, like a student handbook or like your work do's and don'ts or something that's like posted on the wall that nobody ever reads, something like that. Like, it wasn't very well organized. And I saw a lot of Texas alums like, this would have flunked one of your basic business classes at McCombs for how bad this was. Like, it was not good. And then you throw on top of the fact that, you know, Texas isn't really cashing in on the NIL the way a lot of people thought that Texas could. And whether it's the way the university is handling it by, you know, it appearing on the surface like they're just doing whatever it takes to protect the school's intellectual property. Like, I kind of got the hint of this, Snoop, that there was going to be an issue when, I believe it was Roschon Johnson, the first day, July 1st, it was either the first or second day that name, image, and likeness came into effect. He was having an issue. I guess, I don't know if he was getting T-shirts made or whatever, but like, he couldn't use the color burnt orange because the color pattern for burnt orange, it's, I forget what the numbers are, but it's a specific color palette. You can't use it because the University of Texas owns that intellectual property. So, yeah, it's just a really – and if you notice in paint stores and stuff, like, they'll have that shade of orange.
Totally, and makeup stores.
But they'll call it, like, Texas orange or sunset orange or whatever, but it's never called burnt orange because that's property of the University of Texas. So, wherever the communication was lost, whether it's Texas trying to protect intellectual properties, whether it's somebody in the athletic department dropped the ball, there's a disconnect somewhere that's not allowing Texas to take full advantage of name, image, and likeness the way that the richest, most powerful athletic department in the country probably should be able to. At least their student athletes should be able to benefit off of that. We're seeing it in other parts of the country. And again, part of it could be the way that law in the state of Texas is written. But yeah, it's not off to a good start. And that just took a whole truckload of gasoline and poured it on the fire last night. It was like, name me a bad former major league reliever, Snoop, like Armando Benitez. It was like Armando Benitez coming in,
Fernando
trying to
Rodney.
Save a game and just, you know, taking out his blue tips and his gas can and just pouring more on that fire and just making that a four-alarm dumpster fire rather than the little bitty, you know, bonfire that it was before that, the little, you know, it's in the fire pit and then it's raging. I digress. But yeah, it's not good, man. It's not good in any way, shape, or form. And that tweet was bad. In any way you slice it, it was just bad. It was bad because of the language in it. It was bad because of the way it perceived the issue student athletes on the 40 acres are having. It looked bad for the athletic department. And it was just, quite frankly, just poorly done. And I hope whoever was responsible for that, both the language in it, the presentation of it, and the fact that somebody okayed that to go on a social media platform, you'd like to think they're having a meeting, Zoom, in person or otherwise, with Chris Del Conte this morning. Because that just, for the University of Texas, that just should not in any way, shape, or form.
I don't even see it on Twitter anymore.
Did they take it down?
They might have.
We'll check that during the break and see if that tweet is still up. Actually, you know what? If you give me a second, I can throw it in the Twitter machine and check it now.
It was so mean.
Actually, you know what? Chris Del Conte has come out. Give me a breaking news sounder, Snoop.
Oh, wow.
Give me a breaking news sounder. So this tweet was replied to, was quote tweeted by Chris Del Conte about 45 minutes ago. His tweet, and this is from the athletic director at the University of Texas. Ooh, Stoner, nice Joaquin Benoit reference on the text line talking about bad former major league closers. To clarify our tweet below, and this is from Chris Del Conte, to clarify our tweet below, everything we're outlining in regards to NIL is in accordance with the state law that was passed this summer. It's not UT policy. This is the state law we're following. Every state is different, and that presents many challenges, in this ever-evolving landscape. With that said, I'm extremely proud of everything we've put in place and continue to develop in this area. We're staying on top of everything, adapting to changes, and preparing our student-athletes to maximize their name, image, and likeness. So that is the boss man weighing in on that just brutal, horrific tweet posted by the school's official Twitter account last night. So if you want to comment on that, we'll take it. Specs text line 337-3776. Take a break. Come back. We've got a Longhorn notebook, and we've got to get into our Horn Top 20. And it's the Longhorns today, number 18 in the Horn Top 20. We'll talk about that when we come back on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
I was at Tangerine's on more than one occasions back in the day when I was indulging in alcohol and debauchery. And it used to be the most smoke-filled, nastiest place you've ever been in. But people would be there to dance and bump and grind. And it was,
I will just say,
it was a special place.
Quoting my former co-host and great friend, the late Sean Adams, who had the opinion.
Call it green neck bone heat. Always wearing my jeans, baggy sack, you know, Florida, Georgia, sack.
Rolling along, hour number one, Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel, Craig Way on vacation, but we roll along nonetheless. Yo, Snoop, today is, gosh, what would this be? The 28-year anniversary, 28 years ago today, that Robin Ventura charged the mound on Nolan Ryan.
Oh, when he got the knuckle noogie?
Yeah, man. And you know what I love about this brawl? Because A, you forget how long it lasted. And B, after the initial wave gets broken up, there's a second wave that happens. And Bo Jackson is right in the middle of that thing. And you talk about guys I would least want to see in a brawl that are not on my side. As, let me remind the listening audience once again, Bo Jackson on a hunting trip in Alaska once killed a bear, shot a bear at point-blank range with a pistol. Bo 1, Grizzly 0. That's how bad of a man Bo Jackson is. So I would not want to take on Bo Jackson in hand-to-hand combat.
Sports car question. Do you have the black and blue?
I do not. No.
Surprise.
My Bo Jackson collection, I'm going to be honest, my Bo Jackson collection is sorely lacking right now. So I'm about done. I'm almost done completing my Ken Griffey Jr. rookie collection. I've got Score traded. That's the only one I'm missing at this point. And I'm one away from completing my Emmitt Smith collection. And once I do that, I think at that point I'm moving on to let's rebuild my Michael Jordan collection that's been lost, stolen, damaged over the years, and Bo Jackson is one of those guys.
Which is more iconic, the one with the shoulder pads and the bat or the black and blue?
The shoulder pads and the bat. That's more iconic. And, you know, like I think we talked about this because he does a lot of autograph signings. Bo Jackson will not sign that image because there's something – There's some kind of copyright claim with the initial photographer. So, like, if you see, like, if Bo Jackson's at a, I don't know what show, like TriStar or whatever. I don't know if he does TriStar or not. But if you see an autograph show and Bo Jackson's there, you'll see, like, the prices for autograph tickets. And then you'll see in, like, italics, like, will not sign shoulder pads and bat image because of some kind of copyright issue. So, but yeah, that was today in 1993. Nolan Ryan at 46, taking care of Robin Ventura. I heard him tell this story one time. It was actually, funny enough, the first time I'd heard him tell it. I'm sure he told it before and has told it since, but it was at a Jim Rome tour stop at the Dell Diamond. This was back in 2003. And Nolan Ryan was one of the featured guests, and he's talking about, of course, it's Rome, so he's going to talk about the Charging the Mound story. And as Nolan Ryan tells it, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said he had only been charged two other times in his career. He had two other guys charge him. One was Willie McCovey. The other was Dave Winfield. So he wasn't sweating too much of Robin Ventura.
Dave Winfield, that's scary.
Yeah, have you seen that? During the breaks, go pull up that video of Dave Winfield charging Nolan Ryan. You talk about two badasses getting ready to go at it. That's two dudes at the top of the list of people I would not want to mess with, Dave Winfield and Nolan Ryan. But enough talk about Dave Winfield, Nolan Ryan, Robin Ventura. We got to get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
And why not a little more interstitial, because this is the Longhorn Notebook, and in today's Horn Top 20 countdown, the Longhorns are up.
When you put that uniform on, you better come to work.
It's the Horn Top 20. brought to you by Allstat Beer. No impurities, no regrets. Number 18, the Texas Longhorns.
For me personally, this is about as high as I was willing to put Texas on a top 20 list. And I think once you start looking at the, this is how I viewed the bottom of the Horn top 20 this year. Kind of that 15 all the way down to 20 range. It's either teams that are really, really good that we don't talk about, Louisiana, Indiana, or teams that I don't have a clue on where to put them in the top 20, but teams that on paper have the talent to be top 20 teams. Teams in that group, like Texas, Miami's another team in that group that I looked at as being a 15 to 20 team. Like, I think Miami's talented. I think they've got a quarterback that can win them a lot of games, but man, I don't trust that program to go put it together and go win 10, 11 games and challenge Clemson in the ACC. LSU is another one of those. Snoop, as bad as they were last year, like you figure they're going to be better. But now we hear the news comes out that Miles Brennan has an injury and he's going to be on the shelf. So I guess there is no quarterback competition in Baton Rouge. I guess Max Johnson's the guy. But around him, it's LSU. They have top 5 to 10 classes every year. Like they recruit at an extremely high level, at an elite level. And let's not forget, they're 2 years removed from winning a national championship. Now, again, there are not a lot of guys left on a roster from then, but Texas to me is in that group. And I've talked about Texas, kind of how I view the Longhorns at the outset, and this is as good a place as any to reset it. When we did the Horn Top 20 Roundtable last week out in Leander at the Leander Beer Market, BK, Brad Kellner, was the host, and he asked us all the same question. Do you think Texas is a lock as a top 20 team right now? At the start of the season, no. I don't think they're a lock as a top 20 team. But, man, I really love the upside of this team. I think the upside of this team can be really good. And granted, there's a lot of pieces that have to fall in place. But it's not a question of, like, we've sat here before. And some of this is hindsight. Like, the only season that I feel like I really hit the nail on the head in terms of, you know, hey, this could really go off the rails, was that 2015 season. Like, when you looked at the quarterback situation and knowing at the time Sean Watson was still calling plays, I speak to various lunch groups across the state. I did a lot of interviews at the time and still do. And obviously I've got the platform at Horns 24/7. I thought, man, I was like, if that game in South Bend gets ugly, I'm like, this could be like a team that's really, really struggling to get bowl eligible, like a 5-win team. And lo and behold, they went 5-7. Now, I do credit Jeff Traylor and Jay Norvell for taking the play calling over from Sean Watson and making chicken salad out of you-know-what, but I digress. But you know, there have been seasons where we've been wrong about Texas, where we should have seen the signs. And a lot of it was in that Charlie Strong era where the signs should have been, they're just talent deficient in some areas. I don't think this team is talent deficient in very many areas. The one area where I think you can say maybe they're talent deficient is on the edge defensively. But again, like, you know, I don't think anybody should expect Ray Thornton or Snoop's favorite Longhorn Ben Davis or Ovia Gofu. I don't think anybody should be expecting them to come in and be Joseph Osai. But, like, we've seen Jacoby Jones flash a little bit. Like, we know he can play. We know Ray Thornton can play a little bit. We know Ben Davis has been on a national championship team. Ovia Gofu has been a rotational player on a team that's been in the college football playoffs. So we know at least in some respects these guys can at least hold their own. Like, are they going to be all going to be starting caliber players? Chances are they're not. But so that's an area where I think Texas is – and I don't even know if it's talent deficient. We just don't know what the talent is there. And I'd say maybe the same thing at middle linebacker, at that second inside linebacker position next to DeMarvian Overshown. But I do think there's some talent there. Like, I think David Bend is a talented guy. I think Jalen Ford's a talented guy. But again, we talk about that position. I talk about it all the time. Like, I can name you five or six guys that have a really good chance to start. But there's not – I don't see any areas. And as much as I bag on the receiver group, there's talent there. So you look across the board, Snoop, and you know, you say, okay, what has the makings of a top 20 team? You need talent. Man, I just don't see many areas where Texas is talent deficient. Or do they lack proven commodities at some position? Yes. But they're not talent deficient, and at least that's a start. And the big picture for me when it comes to Texas is, why did you hire Steve Sarkisian? Why did you decide to make the coaching change? Well, you had to do it for two reasons. Well, one reason why you had to do it, one reason why it's worth trying to upgrade. You had to do it because Tom Herman was an insanely just unpopular head coach who had nobody standing on the table for him at the end of the day when it got time to make a decision on his future. So there was that part of it. The second part of why you made a coaching change is, think about all those close games Texas played under Tom Herman. Now give Tom Herman and that regime credit for this. They got Texas over that hump where Texas was at the end of Mack Brown's tenure and throughout Charlie Strong's tenure, where there were just some of those ugly, as Rod Babers calls them, three touchdown, get off the sticks kind of losses. Like, Snoop, you know, if you're playing Madden and you get down three, four touchdowns,
so you get skunked.
Just put the sticks down. Just walk away. You're done. You got no chance. Too many of those games in the Charlie Strong era. And Tom Herman got Texas over that hump. Texas was competitive in pretty much, like, you can count on one hand, and you don't need all your fingers on one hand to count the number of games where you can say, Texas really wasn't competitive in that game. Like, maybe the TCU game, Tom Herman's first year, but the defense kept them in that game. 2019, the Baylor game was one of those games where Texas was not very competitive and they got a garbage time touchdown at the end. But again, it's few and far between the games where Texas was not competitive under Tom Herman. I just named two and I'd struggle to find a third off the top of my head. But the flip side of that is they were competitive and the opponent was competitive in games where it shouldn't have been competitive. And Tom Herman, and whether it was Todd Orlando or Chris Ash, one of those entities, more often than not, could not give Texas the schematic advantage, the game day, in-game coaching advantage, the adjustments advantage, to put this program, this team, over the top in really close games where it needed just that extra shove to clear the hurdle. Like, you think about, like, one game that just, it doesn't sum up what's happened over the last few years, but go to the Oklahoma game 2 years ago, the game where Texas gave up 9 sacks and Sam Ellinger somehow was standing at the end of that game when he was just getting destroyed all day in the Cotton Bowl. That's a game that Texas, like, it was a one possession game and Oklahoma's backed up coming off their own goal line with like four and a half minutes left. And you're thinking, dude, as bad as they played, if they just get a stop here, they got a chance to go win the game. And obviously they didn't get the stop. That didn't happen. But that's the kind of stuff that in those games against the Oklahomas, against Lincoln Riley, against the TCUs of the world facing a Gary Patterson, against the Iowa States of the world with Matt Campbell. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, and I really believe this. I think pound for pound, the Big 12 has the best coaching in America of any power conference in America. I really, truly believe that. Like, you go top to bottom in the SEC, you'll find some coaches that aren't up to snuff, whether it's head coaches, coordinators, whatever. But take Kansas out of the equation, with Texas with Steve Sarkisian calling offense, Pete Kwiatkowski on defense, Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch, TCU with Gary Patterson and Doug Meacham, even Texas Tech now with Sonny Cumbie joining that staff and kind of going back to their Mike Leach roots of going back to doing more air raid. Matt Campbell at Iowa State with John Haycock as his defensive coordinator. I love me some Neil Brown at West Virginia. Dave Aranda hired Jeff Grimes away from BYU to get that offense turned around. Mike Gundy, year in and year out, maybe over the last decade has done more with less than anybody in college football. So you take all that into consideration, I really do believe the Big 12, and not even to mention what Chris Klieman did Kansas State go back to year one, how close they were to being like a 10-11 win team. And last year, that was a 4-0 team that had a win over Oklahoma in Norman. And then Skylar Thompson gets hurt and their season goes off the rails. So I think that's proof enough. Like pound for pound, I think the Big 12 has the best coaching in America. And you play a lot of really close games in this conference. And that to me is the challenge for Steve Sarkisian in year one. Aside from the win total, we'll get to the win total conversation here in a little bit. But can Steve Sarkisian, A, beat the teams that on paper you're supposed to beat? Can you do that, number one? And number two, if you're in a tight game with an Oklahoma or a TCU or an Iowa State, can you and your staff give this team the kind of schematic advantage they just simply, quite just too many times under Tom Herman, quite simply just did not have, that they did not get? The right decision wasn't made, the wrong decision was made, or the wrong personnel was in the game, or whatever the case. That's going to be the difference between this team being a team that's, I'm not going to say struggling to get bowl eligible, because I think Texas is better than that, but like the floor to me for this team was like a 7-5 season. Like I think that's kind of, that to me, that's a worst case scenario. I don't think this is a 6-6 football team. Trust me. Again, going back to my 2015 comments, if this wasn't like a 5-7 or a 6-6 team, I would tell you I thought it was, had the potential to be a 5-7 or a 6-6 team. I don't think it does. I think this is at worst a 7-5 team. But hiring Steve Sarkisian and that schematic advantage he can give you and the schematic advantage Pete Kwiatkowski can give you, that's the difference between Texas at the end of the regular season being like a 7-5 type team, or maybe being a 9-3 type team. Or maybe if you get a few breaks go your way, maybe you're a 10-2 type team and you're playing. But wouldn't it be something, Snoop, if this is the last year? I thought about this morning, and I know this isn't like some, I didn't unearth some gem of a thought or just brainstorm this great idea. Everybody has said it out loud. I'm just saying it and agreeing with a lot of different people. Wouldn't it be something if this is the last year of Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12? If it's Texas and Oklahoma in the conference championship game, and Bob Bowlesby has to stand up there on the stage at AT&T Stadium on the field and hand a conference championship trophy to the head coach of one of those schools, and either Joe Castiglione, the AD at Oklahoma, or CDC, and shake their hand and like look like he's enjoying the moment when, oh, yeah, these two teams are the reason your conference was propped up, and not only are they heading out the door after this year, but they're doing it both proving that they were the two marquee brands in Texas's in a conference championship game on the way out. That would be a sight to see. But that's just kind of where I'm at with this team. And, you know, I think the floor is 7-5. I think the ceiling, they could be 9-3. I can see a scenario. I think some things have to go their way. I can see this team being 10-2, but I think 9-3 is much more likely. A lot of that's going to go back to the first two games, and we'll talk about that coming up in the next hour and some of the other question marks this team has. But that's kind of my big picture take on Texas. The Longhorns are number 18 in our Horn Top 20 countdown. Specs text line 337-3776. Did I just say Kansas as an example? Yeah, well, I'll say this about Texas playing close games, and I think this sums it up, like how, like the unacceptable amount of close games that shouldn't have been close in the Tom Herman era. Do you realize, Snoop, during Tom Herman's tenure, he never covered none of his Texas teams, and they played Kansas three times, didn't play Kansas last year. Tom Herman's Texas teams never covered a point spread against Kansas. And I go back to that game 2 years ago, right, the game here. That drive that set up the Cameron Dicker field goal, go back and watch it. You throw an out route to Devin Duvernay to set up the field goal. If he gets tackled in bounds, the game's over and you lose. You lose to Kansas. At DKR. Like, that's how close Texas was and losing to Kansas. As we saw with Charlie Strong, you lose to Kansas, that's the unforgivable sin. You get fired for that. So that's the kind of stuff that's got to change under Steve Sarkisian, is beat the teams you're supposed to beat the way you're supposed to beat them and win a couple of those games that maybe are coin toss games or games that you're not supposed to win because you put this team over the top with schematic advantage. You were brought in here to bring this program and provide for this program. If you missed the news at the top, right off the bat, Owen Carey, the linebacker, 2022 linebacker out of Modern Day High School in California, commits to Texas today. He is the 16th verbal commitment for Steve Sarkisian in the 2022 recruiting class. Take a break. We'll come back. Inconceivable. We'll close out our number one here on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
New coach, same standard.
Inconceivable. Inconceivable.
You keep using the Horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, go to austin-orthopedics.com. Let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game, not just on the field or court, but back in the game of life at austin-orthopedics.com. Got a couple snoop for Inconceivable today, and it's a couple of resets that I'll credit the triple option with the first, and I'll credit Aaron Hogan because I would say B&E. Well, technically it's still B&E, but Bucky's on vacation, but Aaron Zay dropped this one on us, and just reset it for those that might not listen to the morning program, but our listeners here. But the first one, the triple option, brought this to my attention, and this has actually been updated. This has come a Dateline in Louisiana, Snoop. As Rod Babers would say, swamp people. Devin Jose Jones was still wearing a tuxedo when he and his bride got into a spat after their wedding on Saturday night while sitting in a traffic jam outside of New Orleans is where this occurred. As the argument grew heated, 30-year-old Jones allegedly accused his new wife of carrying on an affair with a friend who was riding in the car with the couple and who had been at the ceremony that day. Police say Jones then grabbed a gun and began firing bullets at the male passenger. St. John Parish Sheriff Mike Tirigre told WGNO that Jones shot the man in the leg and also struck a driver unrelated to the incident when a stray bullet flew through a car windshield. Both victims were taken to the hospital for treatment and are expected to recover. Police charged Jones with attempted murder, aggravated battery, illegal use of weapons, and aggravated criminal damage to property, according to the sheriff's arrest report. The traffic jam began around 10:30 p.m. after a wreck on a stretch of Interstate 10 that runs through the Bonne Carrie Spillway, which helps prevent flooding from the Mississippi River. Jones, his bride, and other wedding guests got stuck in a line of cars after leaving the reception in Kenner, Louisiana. Tregre said, and if I'm butchering that name of the sheriff, I apologize, said Saturday shooting was one of the strangest incidents of his career. Quote, in the craziness of things I've seen in the last 33 years, that's going to be a top 10, maybe even top 5, he told WVUE. After Jones allegedly began shooting, his unnamed bride ran toward a cluster of first responders who had been dealing with the multi-vehicle accident ahead on the highway. The paramedics let her take shelter inside an ambulance, but Jones followed her, police said. He allegedly banged on the doors trying to reach his bride until sheriff's deputies arrived and arrested Jones. The sheriff's officer said his officers jumped into action almost as soon as shots rang out. The sheriff called it an active shooter on the interstate. He quote, I'm just glad nobody got killed, he told NOLA.com. Wow. So, Snoop, I just want to know what sparked that conversation for that topic to come up and groom to start connecting dots.
He just got married.
I'm going to go ahead and guess an annulment is going to be in order. Is that what happens after that happens that quick? You just get it annulled at that point?
No, you got to work through it, Jeff. Through, better or worse.
I'm pretty sure when firearms start getting used, you're way beyond worse at that point.
Till death.
Almost was till death they parted. It could have been.
Gotta make it at least 24 hours past the nuptials.
Why are you packing heat on your wedding day? Are you anticipating something to pop off? That's another part of the story that I don't get. Like, how was a gun just readily available in this situation?
I bet you like that guy and the groom were like really good friends. Well, were
yeah, but probably not anymore. I'm gonna go ahead and guess all parties involved. You should probably just go your separate ways. I don't think there's any reconciliation.
Do
on
you
that.
Turn them into soap or do something else?
No, that's not a get boiled okay. in oil and have your fat sold for soap. That's a y'all just need to go get an annulment. If the two dudes, if they've been friends for a long time, just cool down, give it a little bit, maybe go have a couple beers, and maybe 10 years from now you laugh at that. But this should be, no, everybody needs to evacuate this situation as quickly as possible. Just, no. Snoop, when I got married, if anybody had a gun on the premises, I didn't know it, but there was no threat of gunfire. When I got married, there was no threat of any awkward conversations. When I got married, that's some stuff you should probably figure out before. Plus, if that got revealed in the car during a traffic jam,
that's what I'm thinking.
Like, what else is hidden in that closet? Because you know there's some more baggage in there. So, well, there's a lot to unpack. And if I'm that groom, I'm not sure I want to unpack anymore. I've probably heard all I need to hear. Thanks B&E, and it was Aaron Hogan and Isaiah Collier this morning for bringing this to our attention. Now, parents, if you got kids in the car, turn the radio down, let me get some earmuffs. I'm giving you your 5-second warning to do whatever you need to do, because
what is this?
This
about?
Is an adult themed story. Okay, are we ready? And I'm just reading from the Daily Mail. Okay, just gonna read the story. All right, here we go. Men who ejaculate more often have a lower risk of developing prostate cancer, a new study finds. Researchers from Harvard University analyzed data from nearly 32,000 men and found that ejaculating at least 21 times a month cut the risk of developing the cancer by 1/3. The links between ejaculation and prostate cancer are not fully known. However, some believe ejaculation could rid the prostate of carcinogens, lower inflammation, and also lead to less stress and better sleep, all of which reduce the risk of cancer. Snoop, here's the inconceivable
better
part of this
sleep.
Who's doing this 21 times in a month? What kind of time do you have on your hands? If you're married, there's no way this is happening. I'm just saying that in a court of public opinion. There's no way that's happening. When you're married and you got kids, you're way too busy for that to go on.
21 for some people is...
Unless you're just, you know, taking matters into your own hands. I guess do whatever you got to do, but 21 times in a month?
That's low for some people, Jeff.
We've already talked about me being, us being the unhealthiest show on this station. I ain't no physical specimen. That just ain't happening 21 times a month. And who counts anyway? Like, who's keeping a tally? I guess if you're part of a Harvard study, you kind of have to. But, and that's the other part of this. If you're part of the survey where, like, they're telling you have to do that, like, somebody's prodding you to do that.
Yeah, that is, when you...
I don't know, man. But, hey... Take care of some business if you want to cut down your risk of getting prostate cancer. So, there's that as we close out hour number one on Light the Tower. We'll be back. Hour number two, Blake Brockermeyer, 24/7 Sports National College Football Analyst at the bottom of the hour. As we roll along, talking about the number 18 team in the Horn Top 20 Countdown, it is the Texas Longhorns. We'll talk more Texas football in hour number two on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital. On the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Chad and Trey.
The great Mike Leach.
The one I always try to remind myself of and remember, what you learn after you know everything that counts. Everybody wants to get on a roll, and everybody wants things easy, and everybody wants to move on to the next thing quickly. But basically, that's a good way of saying you never know everything and to keep learning along the way. But it's what you learn after you know everything that counts. That's the one I try to beat into my own head and make sure I don't forget.
Weekdays 12 to 3 on the Horn.